Hello! Happy New Year and welcome back to the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast where we talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 best horror movies of all time list. My name is Clay. With me as always is Amanda. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm doing well, but I have a request to ask of you.
Okay.
If you outlive me.
Yeah, obviously.
If you outlive me, when I die, mm-hmm. will you have them carry me out of my house to Motorhead, please? Please?
At the most mundane and banal portion of your removal, I will blast Motorhead as loud as I can.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. We are today talking about Phenomena, Dario Argento's Phenomena from 1985. It is number 198 on our list. It has a 76% Rotten Tomatoes score with a 67% audience score. Mm-hmm. Now, we also have a Patreon where we cover, last year we did remakes and reboots,
yes,
which was, should have been called Hits and Misses.
Yeah.
And this year we'll be covering sequels.
Sequels.
And we haven't pinned down exactly what the list is, except for the first one, which is in the month of January, we will be doing Gremlins 2.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'd like to follow us and help support the show, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. I'm trying to put this stuff at the front now.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody listens to the end of the
show.
Except maybe Kyle. He might make it all the way through. I don't know.
Probably.
Had you seen Phenomena before?
Yes, I had. We saw it together.
That's right. We did. And it wasn't that long ago, right?
No, it was like within the last year.
Yeah.
One of the indie theaters near us was showing it, and we took the opportunity to go see it.
And it was one of the Argentos you hadn't seen at that point, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was your experience seeing it for the first time in a theater?
It was really great, actually, seeing it for the first time in a theater, because if I recall correctly, by the end, everyone is kind of, like, laughing
flummoxed.
Or sort of screaming a little bit or, like, chittering. You know what I mean? Like, the crowd reaction for the end of this one was really fun.
Yeah.
But it's always great to see a movie, like an Argento movie, on a big screen because, like, the images and the mood and just the vibes when you have it on the big screen and you've got the big sound system at you playing like Goblin or in this case also maybe Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden, the most subtle use of Iron Maiden.
Yes.
This is a really interesting one because say what you will about the first 90% of it, the last 10% is a fucking banger, man. It's like, and I can safely say, you have no idea what's going to happen.
No.
Even if you've paid attention the whole movie.
No.
The last 10, 15 minutes of this are completely baffling.
Yeah.
As far as surprising.
Yeah. Each piece of the ending has kind of existed in the movie, but the way they all come together at the end is... I just don't think I would have the mind to come up with something like this.
Mm-hmm. It's a great lesson to screenwriters as well, because there is a perfect 3-beat setup, callback, and payoff in this, which we could talk about as one of the greatest subplots ever put to film. But before we get to that, we're going to... Oh, I had seen this...
Yeah, because you'd definitely seen it before we saw it in
theater. Yes, I had seen it at least once before. I was saying last night, before we started watching this, I think I've seen this probably about 4 times.
Hmm.
And every time I've seen it, I cannot remember what happens in the middle of this movie.
I think the ending is so all-consuming that
honestly,
the
even
beginning
that,
and the middle kind of pale in comparison.
I mean, even that, for whatever reason, this movie just does not stick in my brain.
Huh.
I remember very clearly, I remember the beginning, the first girl getting killed.
Mm.
And I remember Jennifer Connelly at the school.
Yes.
But basically everything after that is just like, once I see it, I go, oh, yeah. But
yeah.
If you told me to, if you pause the movie and says, okay, what happens next? No idea. No idea. What's funny about it, though, what's fun about this movie is if you were to get to that last 10 minutes, and pause it and say, okay, Clay, what happens next?
Yeah.
And I told you accurately what happens next.
Yeah.
Whoever is listening to me will say to themselves, he's just making that up.
Yeah, he's just fully given up on even trying to figure it out. He's just giving all sorts of insane shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we will get into that after we take a quick break and play you the trailer for this film.
Jennifer is the new girl in a strange school. She's taunted by her classmates, haunted by a deadly secret.
Is she insane? Well, she's not normal.
And caught up in a murderous wave of terror.
When the murderer hides his victims, he likes to keep in physical contact with them.
But Jennifer's got a few million close friends.
Insects never hurt me. I love all insects.
You're in a position to do extraordinary things.
And she's going to need every one of them. Creepers.
That fly is your magic wand. Ask him to lead you where the dead bodies are hidden, and he'll lead you.
From one of the most acclaimed masters of suspense comes the chilling tale of a young girl trapped in a web of evil. Dario Argento's Creepers. It will make your skin crawl.
Okay, Phenomena from I forgot to ask you, when you saw it in the theater, did it randomly cut to Italian dialogue with no subtitles?
No, it did not. I'm pretty sure we saw a better version.
Yeah.
Than the one that Amazon Prime is currently running.
We'll talk about that a little bit later. Directed by Dario Argento, written by Dario Argento and Franco Ferrini. Starring Jennifer Connelly, Donald Pleasance, Dario Nicolodi, Patrick Bacciau, Fiore Argento. Asia must have been too young at this point. Michelle Soavi. Michelle Soavi is the other cop who's like taking notes in the race. And he is the director of the movie The Church, which is an Argento produced film.
And he's got
three movies he's really known for, which is The Church, The Sect, and Cemetery Man.
Yes,
and
okay.
Two of those three are really good, and the third one is not very good.
I'll talk to you later about which one you think is good and which one you think is bad.
The other fun trivia fact, he is the guy in Demons.
That's where I know
him
from.
Who wears the half mask and like is handing out tickets.
Love that guy.
Yeah. Future
Halloween costume if I have my way.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
He and Argento were buddies, and Argento produced his movies and stuff, et cetera, et cetera.
Nice.
Michelle Soavi and Tanga the Chimp. As film MVP Inga the Chimp.
Mm.
Amanda, what happens in Phenomena?
A young girl who has an amazing ability to communicate with insects is transferred to an exclusive Swiss boarding school where her unusual capability might help solve a string of murders.
Sure.
I mean, that's about as accurate as anything you could say about this movie.
Yeah, if you were trying to sum it up, that's probably about as...
It's probably the most comprehensible... Like, if you were trying to pitch this movie to somebody who was unsure, that's how you'd describe it if it was somebody who was not into the weird stuff.
Yeah, and then what you probably wouldn't follow up with is when that person asks, like, well, what do you mean has a connection to insects? You probably wouldn't say, oh, she makes every insect on Earth super horny for her.
Super horny for her.
Super horny.
I mean,
Jennifer Connelly. I mean, I don't blame.
Well, Clay, some things you'll find in Phenomena include
the
8 Squadrons of Death and the Great Sarcophagus.
Both fantastic giallo film titles.
Or band names.
But
could you imagine a band called the 8 Squadrons of Death?
It's pretty good.
Right?
Yeah. I feel like they would suck. Like, that's the kind of name that's
What about the Great Sarcophagus?
I can see them being really good. I can see the Great Sarcophagus being like a...
Why do I...
Because the Great Sarcophagus is like a little bit more intellectual of a name while still sounding very doomy.
Why do I feel like the Great Sarcophagus would be Danhausen's band's name?
It sounds more like a magician whose gimmick is he's a mummy. The 8 Squadrons of Death sounds like they're trying too hard. You know? It's so when you get there and you go, oh, these guys are probably...
Mm.
You know the band Ghost?
Yes.
I don't get them.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Great name.
Yep.
Fantastic look.
Mm-hmm.
I think their music sucks.
Yeah.
It doesn't match the whole vibe.
Yep.
and it makes me really mad.
Because the potential.
Yeah. And also, like, so many people love them.
Yeah.
And I can't figure it out.
They are in the niche of the type of music they are. They are popular.
Yeah. That guy's voice is so boring.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's like that where, you know, it's go, oh, this guy sounds hard as hell. And then you go see them and it's like, oh.
Yeah.
They have a DJ.
The sign of a bad band.
Yes.
You heard it here first, folks. A foeign wind and its associated illnesses, or the Swiss Transylvania.
Yeah, I have a theory about the genesis of this movie, and I am at least partially correct. So, I was watching this. I was going, this is so random, but also so specific of a concept and a setting.
Mm.
I have to assume that, like, Argento read a book about how the cops use bugs to help solve cases. Apparently that is true.
Yeah.
And also he must have read the encyclopedia entry on the Swiss Alps or something and was like, because that's real.
Yeah.
The phone wind is real.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the sort of, I don't think there's like scientific evidence, but there's definitely like a folk belief around it possibly causing psychosis.
Yeah, I would love it if there were actual scientific proof that the wind drives you insane.
Yeah.
But that's a shame that there's not.
Dream of the world you want to live in, Clay. Inexplicable Iron Maiden, inexplicable Motorhead, inexplicable voiceover narration?
Yeah. So at least the last instance is something I want to get into a little bit.
The most inexplicable of all sound elements.
It is and it isn't. Mm. And I think we'll talk about that in a little bit. But this was the first movie where Argento started using needle drops.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly not super refined in how he doles those out. the Iron Maiden needle drop.
The one where they keep talking about the feel of the steel.
Yeah, and the flash of you'll die where you stand in a flash of the blade.
Yep.
Not entirely subtle, given the scene that it's first played in. But that plus the Motorhead song. The Motorhead song is just baffling. But both of them seem to be placed over what could be viewed as boring business.
Yeah. It's like he like rewatched it in the edit and was like, ugh. That scene's boring. Let's put the song over there.
Like, we can't cut out the scene where we take the body out of the house.
We need her to see that he's dead.
Yeah. And then transition to the cop.
Right.
So what if we just drop Ace of Spades or something on there?
Right. Yeah. Sounds like a good plan to me. Mm. Dreamscapes by Michael Mann.
Yeah. That dream she has is pretty rad. And like, plus the music, it felt like it was something from Manhunter.
It really does.
It kind of had a Hannibal vibe to me. Isn't Hannibal big on like the stark white spaces? Hannibal, the show, Amanda's favorite show.
Not big on it.
No.
There were a couple marketing images that really used it.
I guess when
but
I picture
in the show itself, it's actually very opulent interiors, often very dark. There's kind of a running joke about how the original run of that show was like so dark you couldn't see half the details in the background.
Okay. I do, my memory of that show in my mind is mostly white and like a melting deer.
Yeah, I mean, if as far as like the opening goes, you're pretty spot on.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was from the era where they had all the openings involved like melting wax versions of people's faces and stuff.
Kind
of. Like the Daredevil entry opening.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. You're not far off. The Lady of the Flies.
Yes. Is that Jennifer or is that somebody else?
Yeah, that's what the headmistress calls her.
Okay.
Yeah. Transitional adolescence channeled through weird hobbies and obsessions.
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly really cornered that market.
Yeah.
Specifically, well, obviously female, but specifically female adolescence in a weird transitional phase.
Mm-hmm. With an oubliette involved.
What's an oubliette?
Watch Labyrinth again. Get out of here.
Tell me.
It's a pit.
Oh.
It's Labyrinth. He talks. Anyway,
well, excuse continue. Me, princess. I haven't gotten out to the.
I'm obviously the Goblin King.
We're I haven't got out to the grounds of the vassal states in a while to check on the oubliette. Mm. But yeah, it she kind of, I feel like she's got this weird trilogy where she's got Labyrinth, and it's all sort of like old enough to start being horny, but not quite sure how to do it yet.
Yeah.
So there's Labyrinth.
Old enough to start being horny, but still too young
yeah.
to openly be horny.
Yeah. When someone I saw described Labyrinth as a girl transitioning into like a sexual awakening, I was like, oh my God. That's exactly what that movie is. And that's fucking wild.
Yep.
So there's that. There's this one, which is a little bit strangely more tame, I guess, if you want to look at the subtext of it. But sure. The other one is that one. What the hell's the name of it? Where she's trapped in the, she's locked in the Target with that one guy. And it's basically 2 hours of them hanging out at Target after Target closes.
Oh.
And him just ogling her.
Yep.
And it's clearly just her in a white tank top going, look, everyone, I have boobs now.
Yep.
And it's like those three movies are like, okay, that's a good.
And now she's a woman.
Overview.
Yep.
Yeah.
A dead girl's coat with a bedazzled iron cross on it.
Yeah, I know that's not that controversial, but it's still weird to see.
I'm going to talk about that later.
Oh, okay.
Okay. A sick Bee Gees shirt.
I like that Bee Gees shirt. I wish the character had been a little bit less one note.
Yeah.
Than just to be like, you know.
I think he's from the Bee Gees.
Oh, we forgot to mention, because I was curious, as things you'll find, because I was curious how you feel about this. Because the more I see this, the more I wonder if this is just a really hack scene to put in a movie. When you're in an English class and the teacher is describing a poem.
Uh-huh.
And every time I see that now, I'm like, is this interesting or is this just pretentious bullshit?
It's just pretentious bullshit.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't get sucked in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just pretentious bullshit. The age-old debate, Richard Wagner versus Richard Gere.
Yes. One, big fan of Goebbels. The other.
No, wasn't Goebbels a big fan of him?
Either way, the other big fan of gerbils.
Gross, Clay.
That's the only reason I wanted you to do that one.
Gross. a maggot.
Allegedly. I'm sorry. Allegedly. Unproven.
Yeah. Don't get us sued by Richard Gere, please.
Honestly, if that proved that he was a listener of the show, I would in court, I would have him put it on the record that that's where he heard it.
Yeah. A maggot who's seen some shit.
I love that scene when she picks up a maggot and the maggot, she like gets maggot vision.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, there was this girl and then she was stabbed and then she was dead and then she was delicious. Yeah. But then she was in his blood everywhere. Yeah. And there's this guy.
I think it was your friend. I don't know, man. a crime sniffing fly.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be fun if you could actually do that. Just like.
Be like, take me to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give him a cloth with a scent on it and just let him go.
Find it, boy.
Flies.
Sniff it out.
Notoriously easy to track once they're in the open air.
Right.
Yeah.
Just tie a little lasso to him. That's what he did.
He did, really?
They had him on it. They had the fly on a little string.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
That's what they did. And last but certainly not least, a Friday the 13th inspired ending.
Yeah.
Which you want to argue with me about.
I don't know if I would argue.
You don't see it.
I kind of
surprise, like, all right, boat on the lake.
Yeah.
Surprise decapitation.
Yeah. Exploded boat.
Yeah. Fake out ending.
Yeah.
I think there's enough pieces there.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. So this is Dario Argento's film that occurs, that he made between Tenebrae and Opera.
Ooh.
And we did Tenebrae on the Video Nasty series, which is also on Patreon. We haven't done Opera yet. Opera is cool. It's very much a more grounded return to form after this.
Hmm.
But this is easily the weirdest movie he's ever made. And at least up to this point.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that as a negative.
Right.
But I think what's really interesting about this movie is that it is very weird, but the weird stuff is kind of couched in extremely familiar stuff, specifically from him, that I don't know if he was doing that because he didn't have any other ideas. or if he was doing that to kind of be like, okay, I'm going to try something weird here.
Yeah.
But I'll give them some stuff that they're used to so they can, so it kind of like couches the weirdness.
Yeah.
Because like Suspiria,
mm-hmm.
not a giallo film,
mm-hmm.
right? By the hard and fast definition of
sure.
whatever nerd you get stuck talking to at a bar about this. This one, however, I kind of feel like you could make the case that this is a giallo.
I consider it one.
Because it has all of the classic elements.
Yeah. It's got the murder mystery.
Murder mystery, the American who
yep,
comes to...
Yep, the foreigner coming into Europe. It's got the cop plot.
Yep. It just also happens to have a girl who can psychically communicate with insects.
If you took that out of this movie and just tweaked a couple scenes to get rid of that...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you could have made a more... weird to say a traditional giallo, but you could have made a more traditional giallo without the psychic bug control.
Sure, sure.
And it would have been recognizably a giallo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I, you know, psychic bug control, insanity-causing alpine wind. Take yes. those out. Yeah, you've got yeah. something fairly yeah. down the middle.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts? How do you feel about this movie?
I have such mixed feelings about this movie because there are elements of it and pieces of it that I love,
mm-hmm.
and there are pieces of it that just frustrate me and do not work for me whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that this happens over such a short amount of time is lightly insane.
What's
like, she shows up one night,
right?
And by the next day, the headmistress already hates
right,
her
right.
and is strapping her down for like medical
yes.
tests
yep.
and threatening to have her committed. It has taken less than 24 hours. The whole school hates her
mm-hmm.
and is like tormenting her pretty much immediately. No one likes her other than her roommate.
And even that is like tenuous.
Right, right. It's sort of like the roommate, Sophie, seems like the type who's kind of ready to please whoever she happens to be with at the moment.
And she's also right? more interested in her personal life, being the
yes.
daughter of a hot actor.
Paul which, Corvino.
Apparently, originally, Argento mm-hmm. wanted her to be the daughter of Al Pacino.
Is that why Paul Corvino rhymes with Al Pacino?
Possibly. But he said no. He wouldn't let them do it.
Yeah.
Because they was going to have like pictures of him and video clips.
Yeah, that would have been weird.
And he said, I don't really want you to make a movie about a daughter I don't have.
Yeah.
Such a... Again... Weird choice.
It's just a weird a lot of weird choices in this movie, and some of them work better than others.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But it's, at the same time, I find myself whenever I've watched this movie, I'm still drawn in. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like I still think certain sequences are very beautiful to mm-hmm. look at. I think some of the weird stuff is actually really fun. There's some really good kills in this.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Yeah.
Which I kind of forgot about. Like speaking of what you were saying at the top, where there's a weird sense of like not really being able to retain this movie in full in your mind. Mm-hmm. I share that. I definitely remember the ending, but I did not remember the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't remember that the first girl, like her head goes through like a window in a cave at a waterfall.
Gotta have one.
They got two in this movie.
Oh yeah,
at least.
Yeah,
maybe three.
No, I mean every waterfall needs to have a cave with a window.
I thought you meant a dead girl's head going through a window.
No, every Argento movie needs
yes.
to have that,
yeah,
which
true.
We'll talk about in a bit.
But yeah, I mean, I think Jennifer Connelly is just compelling to watch mm-hmm. in pretty much anything she's ever in.
She's really interesting in this because, like, I don't know if her delivery is amazing, but her screen presence
yeah.
is
yes.
pretty impressive.
Yeah,
like that first scene where she's in her dorm room talking to her roommate.
Yeah,
obviously the roommate's played like a bit of a dope,
right?
But Jennifer Connelly, she just comes off as like a woman, like
yes.
a confident woman.
Yes, yeah, she's an interesting heroine. She's an interesting mm-hmm. main character because she is very young. But she never feels fully like a child.
Right.
I think there's only one time where you could argue she does, and it's when, towards the end of the movie, when Frau Bruckner tells her, take the medicine, and she's like, okay.
again, a baffling choice.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, fine. I don't want to, but I'll go closed door and actually take it.
In a bathroom where I could rinse or flush these down the toilet, and I will actually take them. But yeah, I agree completely on the dialogue is not the best in this movie, mm-hmm. especially I would say for the girls, for Sophie and Jennifer. It's like they feel like they're having two completely separate conversations whenever they speak to one another.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's a language barrier thing. I don't know if it's just because who cares?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Jennifer Connelly is just enjoyable to watch. Mm. Like the scenes she's in, she is like very magnetic. Having Donald Pleasence in this is kind of a fun surprise.
He must have loved this because he just gets to sit down the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, he does have to play with bugs.
That's true.
So hopefully he likes bugs. Right, yeah, liked bugs.
And he gets to do a fun accent.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And this movie is just so unique. Even amongst Argento films, it's a very weird movie. And
yeah.
I feel like that makes it fun to watch. And the ending is like an all-time fucking bizarro.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to describe it. So I have like a strong affection for this movie. But I also don't think it's a very good movie.
Yeah. So my thought about this kind of... stems back to the voiceover thing, right?
Mm.
So that's one of the things that I feel like is pulling from. Yep. Yeah, you ever watch you Mel Brooks fan?
Not really.
No.
Not against him, just not as familiar with him as many are.
Mel Brooks has made a lot of movies.
Yes.
There are like you can see any like four or five of them
mm-hmm.
and be like, wow, comedic genius.
Yeah.
And then you start watching the other ones and you go, wow, he recycles a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And for someone who isn't really known as a recycler, excuse me, this has a lot of recycled stuff in it where the voiceover is straight out of Suspiria.
Mm-hmm.
Head through the glass. He's done that at least twice
previously. Yep.
The Black Love Killer.
Mm-hmm.
A number of other things. However, when the voiceover popped in, mm-hmm. I was thinking like, wow, man, that's so weird. Like this, yeah, it's a spirit. I guess it's kind of the same thing. But then I kind of started thinking about it in that same mm-hmm. mindset. And especially towards the end,
mm-hmm.
the movie becomes a lot more dreamlike.
Yes.
And a lot more... It's got a big Alice in Wonderland kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
Especially once she starts going down the hole.
Yep, into the tunnels and underground and coming out through these caves.
Everyone knows how much I love a literal threshold crossing or descent.
Yes.
Which even that is something he does a lot. Like, remember, mm-hmm. Did we do Inferno?
I don't think we did.
Have you watched Inferno?
I don't think I have.
Anyway, Inferno's got this great version of that.
Yeah.
Where this girl is looking for this key,
mm-hmm.
and she's in the basement of a store.
Mm-hmm.
This, like, old building. And she drops the key into, like, mm-hmm. this exposed puddle of water,
mm-hmm.
and she goes to reach for the key.
Oh, maybe we have, or we've at least seen this.
Oh, you know what? I think we did it on Video Nasties.
Yes, I think we did.
Yeah, and she reaches for the key. But it's not just a puddle. It's an access point to an entire another flooded floor.
I do remember this, yeah.
So I love that stuff.
Yeah.
And that feels very similar to this where it's, you know, mm-hmm. she's trying to get this phone and ends up in this ridiculous tunnel.
Yeah.
And then gets pulled into this insane basement.
Yep.
With this giant pool of dead bodies and stuff.
Yep.
And watching it with more of an eye towards the fairy tale dreamlike aspect to it, I think it plays a lot better that way.
Yeah.
It's tough though, because like I really my slavish devotion to story structure really butts up against my love of dream logic sometimes.
Yeah.
And I feel like you can only go so far excusing that stuff as well, it's dream logic, man. It doesn't need to make sense.
Yeah.
Until you as a cover for it just,
right. Yeah. Like I just thought it was cool and I didn't really want to have to explain it.
Because that usage, the reuse of a lot of stuff,
mm-hmm.
like I was saying before, kind of feels like he's got a couple ideas he wants to play with.
Yeah.
But he's kind of patching the holes with stuff he just knows how to do.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, even... It's also, this is a little bit of a pivot, but it's also interesting to me when you have a movie like this that's going to eventually evolve into this very dreamlike folktale ending. But so much of what the beginning of the movie is like very concrete.
Yeah.
You know, it's about like time of death with insects.
Right. It's yeah, it's very about forensic specific science. It's about forensic science, but it's about a type of forensic science that sounds fake. You know, like yeah. it's I'm sure it's all real that mm-hmm. you know, based on what certain bugs and stuff yeah. and decay they can yeah. pinpoint or get down to.
I think that's which very
is,
real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is very cool, mm-hmm. but it also sounds made up. You know, so yeah. there is a kind
probably
of...
Probably extra sounded made up in like 1980, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, now we're used to CSI
right.
and things like that.
Yeah. But there is a certain level of surreality that yeah. comes from, let's talk about solving this murder while we're looking at this severed, decomposing yeah. head with bugs crawling
that thing
around
is
it.
Gruesome.
Yeah, that's one of those ones where I was wondering, like, did they just get a real head? Because that... Yeah. That looks pretty good.
I don't know, guys. Yeah, this movie also, not to change subjects, it's fascinating because I think a lot of the marketing is very focused on Jennifer Connelly.
Understandable.
And how her, like, she's this, like, innocent beauty, mm-hmm. and it's very ethereal, and she's very kind of mystical. Mm-hmm. And then you watch this movie, and it's so much of this movie is about maggots.
Yes.
And I'm not super squeamish around bugs, but I get to a point with this movie where I'm like, I think I've seen enough maggots.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm ready to be done.
When she's at Dari Nicolodi's house.
And they're like under
they're on
her
the soap.
Nails.
Yeah, and like in the hand towel. It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
And it's strange too because like technically that shouldn't bother her.
Yeah.
But she is kind of like put off by ugh. It. Even though they're probably there to be like, follow us.
Yeah, yeah. We can show you the way. Yeah. Yeah, this movie, it's a very weird experience watching this movie.
Yeah, and I thought maybe they were trying to sell it on Jennifer Connelly's, who she was as a known actress mm-hmm. based on, like, Labyrinth. But Labyrinth comes out the year after this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even think she's really anybody at this point.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think this was maybe, like, the second movie she'd ever done.
Yeah. Apparently had a great time. I only found one clip on YouTube mm-hmm. of her talking about it.
Yeah.
And it was kind of charming. The guy who was interviewing her about a show she did on Apple TV was like, yeah. he was like, when I was in college, you know, we did a big course on Italian horror movies. And so I just really wanted to ask you, I love Argento. I wanted to ask you what it was. And she was rich. She was like, oh, yeah. It was awesome. It was crazy. And I was game for anything because I could really see that going either way.
Well, did she talk about Inga attacking her?
No, yeah. I did read that though. Yeah,
yeah, I've seen. There's definitely an interview she did a while back with Conan O'Brien and I think maybe one other where she doesn't get super into it in tons and tons of detail,
mm-hmm.
but she does talk about how at one point she was sort of asked to help direct the chimp.
Mm-hmm.
In a scene to not like the chimp kept turning and they were like, we gotta somehow keep the chimp like facing the right way.
Yeah.
So if you see her start to turn, can you maybe just like take her shoulder a little bit? And she did. And the chimp bit her.
Yeah.
And then after that, the chimp was like, fuck that girl.
Yeah.
And they couldn't, they had to use, I think, a double a couple times for
trying
her.
To upstage Inga.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
That fucking, that chimp will kill you.
Inga was in Bingo Boingo. She's a star. Not taking any shit from this newbie.
She is kind of the MVP of this movie.
Oh, definitely.
She's got a very nuanced performance. It's mm-hmm. very impressive.
It's really good.
Yeah. I would say one of my favorite, like, you could call it a jump scare. One of my favorite jump scares of all time is the killer with the black gloves is in the car and the, you know, you see the hands on the steering wheel and they're starting to drive away. And then fucking Inga like pops over from the roof of the car, banging on the top of the windshield, screaming.
Yeah. Like, that whole scene is really well done.
Yeah.
Because not only the thing with the death of Donald Pleasance, I think in and of itself is like right on the line of credulity where it's like, okay, yeah. I understand the tension you're trying to build by having him stuck in this wheelchair going down this assisted ramp thing.
Yeah.
And having nowhere to go and then just getting stabbed.
Right.
However, I don't know. I feel like he could have tried harder. Just hurl himself off. Anyway, but that's...
I mean, that's also one of those scenes in movies that I... Whenever I watch them, I wonder if... In the world of the movie, in the actual moment for that character, it's so dark for them that can't see. But the director has to light it somewhat so that the audience can tell what's happening.
Yeah.
But for the character, they're like blinded in the dark.
Yeah. I do think that's one of the things that frustrates me when people use the, well, why didn't he do this argument to like dismiss something?
Mm-hmm.
Because you as the viewer have all the information.
Yes.
Because in order for you to understand what's happening, they need to give you generally more information than the characters have.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you can say that
when
you have more information given to you in a period of time that's probably elongated.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to think about it, mm-hmm. especially because you're not the person it's happening to.
Yep.
And I say that as someone who definitely has made that argument before.
We all do at some point, but it is like, even if you put yourself in McGregor's position where he's in his own home and he's comfortable and it seems like, you know, Inga's kind of agitated and he starts coming down the stairs to see what's up with Inga, and maybe he sees a figure there, but he probably just sees the figure of a woman.
Right.
And he might be like, wait, who is that? Is that Jennifer? Is it Greta come back? What's going on? It's mm-hmm. not going to be immediately like, oh no, there's a man with a gun. Like, that's not the kind of movie it is. So you can kind of forgive him for, he's stuck on this little like elevator for his chair and it's, you know, might be the type where once it starts going, it's hard to get it to stop and go back.
Yeah. But
anyway, yeah.
I think the thing that makes that scene work so well mm-hmm. is Inga.
Yes.
Because, man, the killer basically uses lures her out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Inga, of course, is his helper chimp.
Yes, his nurse and his friend.
Yeah. lures her out of the house, then mm-hmm. shuts the door, locks it behind her so she can kill Donald Pleasance. And as this slow motion thing is happening,
mm-hmm.
Inga is like clawing at the door and can see it through the slats.
Right, is trying to like fight her way back in to save her friend.
Yeah, and it's a very affecting performance.
It is.
And whether it's the performance or just the editing makes it feel that way, it's very sad.
Yeah, it's very, it's
and
very
then not only done. Not only that part, but then afterwards when she comes in and finds him dead and like lays her
like
head
sits
on the chair
with him for a second to like check on him and then realizes like, oh.
Yeah.
And then goes after the car of the killer.
Yeah.
Fucking love it.
I feel like most movies, that's where Inga's role ends.
Yeah, not this movie.
And that's what I was talking about when I said there's some screenwriting tips you can take from this. Because very clearly at mm-hmm. different points in this movie, there are things set up.
Mm-hmm.
The first time you see Inga, she's got a knife.
So that's what I should have put in the things you'll find. Chekhov's scalpel. Damn it.
She's got a knife.
Yeah.
And I think initially what he's doing is playing Inga as a red herring. Because mm-hmm. that's right after the first girl gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see Inga with the knife and you're like, oh, is this going to be like Murders in the Rue Morgue or something?
The monkey keeps killing everybody. Yeah.
And then she brings the knife. Who knows where she got it?
Yeah.
Brings it into the house, and Donald Pleasance is like, no, don't play with that.
Yeah,
that
never
can hurt
touch
people.
That again. Yeah.
And shows her how it can cut stuff.
Yeah.
And so then you've got the scene.
And he even says, once I show her something, she never forgets it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then you've got the scene where Donald Pleasance is killed.
Yes.
And Inga's first thought mm-hmm. is revenge.
Yes.
And so she jumps on the car, tries to get the car, excellent, then falls off the car.
Oh.
But then, inexplicably,
yes.
But hey, dream logic, baby. Yeah. This is an Italian horror movie.
This is how we roll.
Inga wanders over to a trash can in the woods
uh-huh.
and finds a pristine straight razor, like gleaming in the night straight razor, picks it up, looks at it, and then walks away with it in her hands.
It is Inga's Liam Neeson moment.
Yes. And then what's brilliant about the movie.
Oh my God, no, Inga is John Wick.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. What's brilliant about all this is that after that point, Inga disappears.
Yeah, you don't see
and
it.
And so much other crazy shit happens that you forget
Yes.
And that scene is so weird that you're like, that's weird. She's picked a knife out of the trash and walking. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And so you see in a row, maybe like three or four of the craziest things you've ever seen.
Yes.
And after all of that, when Jennifer Connelly is at her lowest moment, the mighty return of Inga, who just fucks her up with that straight raise. Not Jennifer Connelly, the Dario Nicolodi.
Frau Bruckner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deus Ex Machina.
That would have been another good thing.
Yeah,
you'll
we
find.
Should have done that.
Damn it.
I only thought of that now.
We did talk before we started recording this episode about how this is the type of movie where the whole like 1 hour episode could have just been you and I going back and forth listing things you'll find.
Yeah. Because it is, again, it's a weird mix of I think the thing that always stands out to me is it gets so weird where after that first scene, every time I watch this, I feel like that first scene, I kind of go, all right, because it's this girl who doesn't get on the bus. And then
she misses her tour group.
Yeah, and then she starts wandering around the woods, and then somebody starts chasing her, and then she gets her head
put... No, she goes into a house.
Oh, she goes into a house?
Yeah.
See, I don't even remember that.
It's the house that Jennifer ends up in before she gets kind of lightly abducted.
Then she goes to a waterfall, gets her head put through a window. Mm-hmm. It's like slow motion.
Gets her head cut off.
Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we all see you, Dario. And
then we cut to Jennifer in a cab, and she starts talking about how the insects like her.
Yeah.
And she like tames a bee.
Very similar. That whole sequence is very similar to the beginning of Suspiria.
It is and it isn't, right? Like it's kind of the exact same setup, but total opposite.
Yes, yeah. Similar in that it's got a lot of the same elements, but it's not like he's exactly redoing things.
Right,
but,
right.
At least not in that sense. But he finally got his school full of actual girls.
Yeah.
Which he couldn't get for Suspiria. And does absolutely nothing with it.
Nope. This movie, I think, also suffers from like an overabundance of plot in a way. Like,
yeah.
Where there's just too many little plots going on so that the big plot gets kind of muddled and lost. Mm-hmm. You've got whatever's going on with Dr. McGregor and Inga at any given time. You've got the murders of the girls in the area and the cops trying to figure out what's happening.
Maybe.
They're in
like three scenes.
Right. And then you've got Jennifer not being able to get in touch with her dad or anyone from back home. And then Jennifer's like not fitting in at school. Mm-hmm. And then her bug stuff. And then everybody thinking she's crazy. And you've got the roommate, and the roommate's got a secret boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And you've got like murders happening in all the abandoned buildings that are surrounding this school.
Of course. And there's a whole abandoned wing of the school where that one girl gets killed.
Yes.
Right? I see. That's the school building, right?
I think it's one of the buildings on the grounds.
Yeah, yeah.
I think like they all live in the main building and the school's in the main building. And then there are all these other buildings on the grounds that they're like, well, we didn't keep them up, so they're not safe. So don't go there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got, you've just got all these little like mini plots happening. And it just feels like a lot of busyness, but not a lot of actual cohesive storytelling.
Yeah. It is, however, weirdly held together by this idea that there is a killer on the loose.
Right.
Which they mention a couple times, but like you said, there's
a
lot of stray threads that are kind of involved to that, but kind of doing their own thing.
It is interesting, too, that there's at least one murder, if not multiple, that are either mentioned outright or implied, but you don't see them.
Yeah.
There's Donald Pleasance talks about the girl that used to come visit him and help him out, be sort of his assistant, and how he's pretty sure she was killed because she just disappeared and no one has ever seen her again. Mm-hmm.
Maybe she was arrested for being a Nazi based on her coat.
I will come back to that in just one second. Okay. Give me a second. And then there's one of the scenes when Jennifer is sleepwalking and someone's about to get murdered and the TV in the dorm room is on. Mm-hmm. It's like showing a news broadcast and it keeps showing the names of girls.
I really like that scene. Silent news broadcast. Really liked it. Yeah.
But we don't see all those girls die.
Right.
We only really see the girl at the beginning who I think is named Vera.
Yeah.
And then you see the girl who's also at the school, and you see Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
But there's two other there's at least two other people who are presumably killed by this killer, and we just never see it, mm-hmm. which is a really interesting choice.
Yeah, I mean,
for
I like
a giallo
it.
Movie. It's just kind of strange. Like, I think a different version of this movie would focus much more linearly on all those murders kind of coming one after another.
Right, yeah.
And that would be the central backbone of the plot. Mm-hmm. And it would feel more like Suspiria, with Jennifer kind of moving through and around the school trying to, like, find clues and,
right.
and hints and things.
But it's pretty clear that is not the thing that's really interesting him mm-hmm. in this, mm-hmm. which again, I think goes to him sort of playing the hits a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that stuff is like, yeah, I know how to do that stuff.
Yeah. He kind of just wants the connective tissue there to keep things moving along. He's mm-hmm. not really interested in, like, fleshing it out all over again.
Yeah.
Where he's already done it.
I have to say, this probably has one of the prime examples of my problem with the cop plot in general. Yes. Well done. where you've got these two cops mm-hmm. who are in it purely for expository reasons.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end is only there to be another person to die.
I had to go back to the beginning of the movie to be like, wait, is Inspector Giger one of the cops at the very beginning talking to Dr. McGregor?
Mm-hmm.
I think he is.
I think so, yeah. He's the one that's not Michelle Soavi.
Yeah.
Dr. Giger being, wait.
Inspector Giger. Smart.
Inspector Giger, yeah. The guy who gets chained to the wall.
Yes.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't, like, it had been so long since I'd seen him that I didn't remember when he popped back in at, like, the very end. I was, like, you know, when he shows up asking questions about the house and then shows up at the Frau's house and asks about her history. I knew he was a cop. I remembered that much. But it was just like, wait, were you at the beginning? Am I supposed to feel like you've been doing stuff this whole time? Because I don't. But yeah.
He's inspecting.
He's just inspecting left, right,
talking
and center.
Talking to people. Yeah. Looking at Michelle Soavi's notes.
I read a little bit of trivia about this movie
mm-hmm.
that kind of lightly blew my mind, even though I think it's fucking weird. Apparently, Dario Argento, when he originally conceived of and shot this movie, in his mind, this film takes place in an alternate version of reality from ours.
Sure.
Where the Nazis won.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
He, in his mind, this movie is set in a different version of the world where the only key difference is that the Nazis won World War II.
Okay. I can't say that really comes through.
It kind of, like, all right. Once I knew that that was his.
Mm-hmm. Has he said that that is how he views the film? Or
I think so.
Okay.
I don't have a source directly in front of me right now, but mm-hmm. I'm sure if you know, we Google, it was definitely in the Wikipedia. It was on another couple articles I read, and there were, like, quotes from him. I should have clicked through and followed to, like, the actual, like, this was the interview.
Mm-hmm.
But it's out there that he thought, to him, this takes place in a version of the world where the Nazis won World War II. And so everyone collectively has this enormous trauma and, mm-hmm. and this enormous event that happened, but nobody talks about it.
Okay.
Like, it's far enough in the future from the war, you know, it's presumably about 40 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just become normal reality, which is why it's not like a big spoken plot point.
Sure.
But if you watch the movie, there are a couple little things where I'm like, I guess, like, I get, like, the Iron Cross coat.
Mm-hmm.
There's that.
I chalked that up to the Iron Cross being a symbol in Germany that predates Nazism. Also,
maybe?
Obviously, they.
But why include it in the Swiss? You know,
girl's German. I don't know.
But even then, the fact that, like,
Lemmy from Motorhead wears it all the time.
Motorhead. There you go. No. But the fact that the reason why this stuck out to me and I kind of I don't want to say I necessarily like that, mm-hmm. like, glaze over this movie, but it did help me reconcile, because as you know, and as I've mentioned while we record this, I really don't like the school plot in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so truncated, and it's just so aggressively, like, she's immediately an outcast.
Right.
Everyone immediately hates her. It doesn't matter that she's the daughter of this, like, famous heartthrob that everybody's obsessed with. You'd think all these girls would be sucking up to her.
Yeah, and she's going by the way movies depict things, way too attractive.
Right, right. Yeah. She's beautiful. She's rich. Mm-hmm. She has a hot, famous father. Everyone would be like, I'm your new best friend. Even if behind her back, they were like, she's a fucking weirdo that likes bugs.
Jennifer, look at all the bees I got you. They stung me pretty good, but I got them for you.
I carried you 4 spiders.
I had 5, but I don't know what happened
to the fifth one. But the fact that the headmistress is so immediately upset and, like, angry about her sleepwalking,
mm-hmm.
and she keeps saying it's abnormal.
Yep.
And the first reaction is, let's bring in the doctors,
mm-hmm.
because you're not normal. You're not living up to this idea of, like, what a young lady should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might have to send you away. It is a very fascist view of, you know.
And they immediately start giving her, like, electroshock therapy.
Yeah, yeah. They immediately are like, we're going to strap nodes to your head and we're going to commit you to somewhere and remove you from society because one time you had a sleepwalking incident. So I kind of was like, all right, you know what? Sure, Mr. Argento. If this takes place in a world where the Nazis won and we're all much more eugenicist about young people, mm-hmm. I guess that kind of makes me, like, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just such a weird, it's like, you know, in like very internet speak where people have a headcanon,
mm-hmm.
it's very strange that that is his headcanon for his own movie.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that technically makes it canon, doesn't it?
I guess, but if they never say it in the movie and it never comes up and it has no actual impact on the film.
I kind of really, like, I don't think it's successful here, if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But I do really appreciate that as, like, an exercise to try and tell a story or make a film that takes place in a different reality.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it's in a different reality is not part of the story.
Yeah, it's beside the point.
Yeah. It's just where it takes place.
Yeah.
That's very fascinating.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Again, this feels like a movie where he's just trying shit.
Yep.
And just, you know,
mm-hmm.
he read 2 books on vacation after Tenebrae. I was wondering if maybe he picked the Alps.
Mm.
Specifically for the contrast of, like, the beauty of the Alps and the flowers and decaying dead bodies.
Maybe.
Or, I mean, based on what you just told me, it could be a reference to The Sound of Music.
I mean, yeah, and then the Nazis fucking loved the mountains.
Yeah.
Isn't that where, like,
Eagle's Nest
and, like, Berchtesgaden Garden and all that is?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they loved their little ski chalets and, like, mountain getaways and stuff.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that, you know, in this world, as in our world, those areas are where, like, elites flock to, right? Mm-hmm. Like, these beautiful scenic towns and resort areas, and you're going to have your fancy finishing school, the Richard Wagner School for Girls.
Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't even put that together.
Yeah.
And all the people that the teacher lists off, they're all Germans, I think, right?
Yes.
She said Wagner and Goethe. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. She is very, she's very Nazi-ish, the headmistress.
Yep. Do we think Hitler's alive at this point? Probably not.
He was
pretty fucked up. If they won the war.
Yes, Clay, I think it's safe to say that Hitler was pretty fucked up.
That's like one of my favorite tweets of all time, which is, no, you do not, under any circumstances, gotta hand it to Hitler.
Yeah. My favorite line from Band of Brothers, which is, hey, get a load of this, guys. The Germans are bad.
But I was just thinking, like, I mean, he was pretty fucked up, like, physically.
Yes,
towards the end. But obviously he was losing the war, but he was on all sorts of drugs.
Yeah.
I'm guessing he's dead by 1950 tops.
I mean, even if you gave him till 60, this is taking place in the 80s.
Yeah, he would have been. That's true. He would have been really old.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
he was probably...
Stalin's dead at this point, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's
dead at this point. I'm dead. You're dead. I didn't exist yet.
Yeah. That's pretty fucking mind-blowing.
Yeah. It's as close to dead as you get until you die.
That's true. That's weird.
Yep.
Well, I have to go get my mind right. let's talk about the... Let's talk about the wrapping up.
Now that I've derailed us into... Let's talk about World War II.
Let's talk about the wrapping up of all of these disparate threads.
Mm.
I'll be honest with you. I don't even really know what was going on. She's got the kid with the weird face, which apparently that's a real thing. I don't think
it's that bad.
No, I don't think it turns children into...
slavering murderers.
Murder monsters. Yeah,
yeah, no.
Usually it's pretty debilitating.
Yeah.
So
it seems like Frau Bruckner was working at the hospital, the insane asylum,
mm-hmm.
and got grabbed by one of the inmates mm-hmm. who raped her through the bars
mm-hmm.
and gave birth to this monstrous child.
Yep, because obviously...
The son of a thousand maniacs.
Yes. Then that child was Freddy Krueger.
Uh-huh. And then she has been hiding / protecting him
mm-hmm.
because he's grown into a murderous goblin. No pun intended. But it's also driving her insane.
Mm-hmm.
Or the trauma of it has driven her insane. I don't know. And then because her son keeps getting out and long distance knifing girls.
Yep.
She has to go around town cleaning up, and by that I mean killing anyone who's on to him.
Mm-hmm.
And because Jennifer...
I don't know.
Because Jennifer is there, she now has to kill Jennifer?
Mm-hmm. What's funny about all this is if she had just played it cool, Jennifer was going to leave. The next day.
I mean, isn't that also kind of a classic giallo thing, though?
Yeah.
Because I feel like... fuck, why am I forgetting the name of the movie? With the guy who's... He's like a painter or something, and he goes to Italy with his... He has like a girlfriend there.
Oh, Bird with a Crystal Plumage.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
As opposed to the one where the guy's a piano player and he goes
or a writer.
Or a writer. Yeah.
But he's trying to leave, right?
Yeah.
Like he's trying to leave and the killer keeps kind of like poking at him, mm-hmm. being like, you better leave, but also here's a hint. And it keeps him like if you would just like let it go,
right?
This guy would have left and you would have been fine. But you're insane. So you're not thinking that way. I kind of love once she's in the house, like once they have Jennifer, like Jennifer has been sort of trapped by Frau Bruckner.
Mm-hmm.
I love how quickly it gets very, very weird.
Yeah.
Not that this movie has been anything but weird the whole time, but it gets in more intensely weird
mm-hmm.
very fast, where she comes in and immediately like all the mirrors are covered.
Mm-hmm.
And
also like Manhunter.
Also like Manhunter. And her teacher, this woman is her teacher, is starting to act very strange and kind of twitchy and just weird. And then she's talking about her son who has to stay in his room with his horrible thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jennifer gets nosy and pokes around and accidentally knocks over what she thinks is a little boy. But it turns out to be like a creepy ass doll.
Like a life-size, you know, My Buddy doll.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and then the Frau Bruckner makes fun of her about it and is like, what, did you think it was real? What's wrong with you? And it's mm-hmm. like, well, why do you have a creepy boy doll? And like Jennifer
maybe
never
if you
asks,
had a creepy girl doll, your son wouldn't be killing somebody. Right.
But like, I love in this movie kind of that Jennifer never asks.
What the hell's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, most of the time in these movies, there's a point where the heroine or the hero says, like, what is happening?
Well, that goes into the thing about the pills, too, because she's come into this weird house.
Mm-hmm.
All the mirrors are covered.
Mm-hmm.
Her teacher's acting really weird.
Yeah, weird, creepy kid
doll. Creepy kid doll. And then she starts screaming at Jennifer about taking this pill. And then after all of that, she gets away from her, goes mm-hmm. into the bathroom, shuts the mm-hmm. door, and then is like, well, I guess I should probably take this pill.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very strange.
Yeah. And then has to make herself throw up very believably.
Yeah. Very yeah, believably.
In a concerning way.
It's good that she knew to do that. Like that's, I remember when I watched Casino Royale and James Bond gets poisoned in that
mm-hmm.
and he like grabs a salt shaker and goes into the bathroom and like chugs the salt shaker and makes it like, oh, that's, I never would have thought to do that. This young girl. Who apparently can pick up when she's been poisoned very quickly.
Yes.
Immediately knew, got to get that shit out.
It's almost like there was a culture of young girls telling each other the best ways to throw up.
I'll be honest, if that was me, I would have been like, oh, fuck, I swallowed that pill. Well, I guess I'm poisoned. I don't even...
Bulimia wasn't a concern?
No. I guess I would have... Like, it wouldn't even occur to me that maybe the pill hasn't dissolved yet.
Yeah, and we end up with that whole sequence, and then she comes out and they fight over the phone.
Yep.
Like she gets in like a physical altercation with her teacher who starts like beating the shit out of her.
Mm-hmm. Then she shuts the blast shields on the house.
Right, which I know there are areas like I've been to other places where that's more common.
Mm-hmm.
Like having those sort of metal shutters that come down over your windows and doors is just like everybody has them.
Like your house is a bodega on the corner in Brooklyn.
I mean, kind of, or like it gets really fucking hot.
You don't want to get that insanity causing wind to come in at night.
I don't know, man. I've been to several cities where those are the types of shutters that are on.
Well, also though, when she goes down into the ground,
mm-hmm.
the area that she comes into, now, I'm only thinking this because of what you said a few minutes ago, seems remarkably like some sort of military bunker.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like a fallout shelter or something, yeah. Maybe. But yeah, so we have this entire insane sequence where she's in the house and fighting with her teacher, and then the teacher is kind of taken out, and she gets her threshold crossing, and she's crawling through this dirt tunnel.
Let's not forget the business that she has to do where she has to climb up to the door.
Oh, God.
Reach through and try to get the phone.
It is kind of tedious to watch that part.
Well, that's why they drop in some Iron Maiden, so it's less tedious.
And then I love the moment when like the hands come out
yeah,
through the wall and grab her and pull mm-hmm. her in, and she's understandably freaking out, but it turns out it's the inspector.
Yeah, I don't know how the hell he did that.
I don't know.
Because his hands like... comes straight out.
Yeah.
And when she comes in, he's chained to a wall.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he has like a couple, maybe like a foot or so
yeah.
of space to play with. But she goes straight into that like pit of molding, rotting corpse fluid.
Yeah.
Which is real fucking gross.
Excellent. I always yeah. love a good pit full of rotting corpses.
An oubliette.
Excuse me. Full of bones and yeah. goo.
Yeah. Melted flesh goo.
Goobliette.
A goobliette. But all of the, you know, like there's so much of this is happening and it's happening pretty quickly.
They're hitting you with a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And so she's drowning in rotting corpses at this point.
My favorite bit there is, you know how sometimes you can, you know, they a lot of times they don't shoot movies in order.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to cover your bases when you're doing a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Evil Dead movies, right?
Mm.
You'll notice in the Evil Dead movies, at a certain point, Ash always wipes his face off. Because like they don't know how much blood is going to be on him after the effect. And they're shooting this thing for... So in this one, I don't know if it was on purpose, but it was a pretty good cover where she's climbing out of the muck pile
mm-hmm.
and happens to kick her way through a water pipe
that
very conveniently cleans her up.
Yes, gets those whites so white again.
Yeah. Great outfit.
Yeah, she has a lot of great outfits in this. I really appreciate her sort of weird style. She's wearing a lot of like menswear mixed with extremely feminine stuff, which I really think is kind of a fun...
Very Diane Keaton.
Yeah, it's very 80s.
Yeah.
I wish that kind of look would come back with the, like, she's going to wear a little tie and like a loose...
Hey. All it takes is one person to start it.
Yeah, I'm too old.
And that person is Kendall Jenner.
There we go. That's it. Perfect. Love it. Kendall, get on it. She also listens. Her and Richard Gere listen
I
together.
Hope so. Kendall, if you're listening, I've made no jokes about your family on any of these episodes that I can remember. Star Trek, don't listen to that show. Yeah. But
yeah, but then, yeah, we get that scene. We get the inspector looks like he's killing the Frau, mm-hmm. and then
great thumb breaking to get out of
yeah,
the
oof.
That's another one of those things where you see it in the movies often enough. I know mm-hmm. I would try that in real life and it would not work, and I'd be like, shit, now I've got a broken thumb. Yeah.
I think the thing more is like, I don't really need to. I can kind of just make my thumb disappear.
Yeah, you should start committing crimes.
Yeah, I have weird joints.
Sweet.
I should start committing crimes. And then Jennifer like escapes and is like running down a weird dungeon hallway and mm-hmm. hears a little boy crying.
Yep.
And finds the son. And I swear I thought it was going to be another weird doll fake out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why are we spending so much time on this? And then he turns and he is actually very grotesque.
Mm-hmm.
And she immediately runs outside, but she can't run outside. She has to like crawl through this like ever shortening tunnel
Love
to
it.
Like emerge back out into the real world and like run to the boat.
Which she like emerges in like a junkyard.
No, she emerges like outside in the woods, and there the little pier is right there.
Oh, does she?
And there's a boat tied to it.
Is the junkyard where she swims to after?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, because then we've got the bugs finally get to have their romantic date night with her.
That's true.
Yeah.
This is a weird movie.
Yeah. There's exploding boats. There's small monster children with extendo knives getting their faces ripped off by bugs.
A boat with the most gas any boat has ever.
For the size, especially.
Yeah. That's another one where it's like, that doesn't make any. Fine. Fairy tale.
Fine.
Whatever. Yeah. The whole lake catches on fire. Great.
Yep. The monster child survives underwater and tries to pull her under, and she gets away and she swims under the fire and he doesn't and he burns. And you think she's escaped. This is the very Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they reversed the order
mm-hmm.
where she's done the boat thing and you think she's escaped. And now she comes on to land and she sees her savior, right? It's the lawyer.
Yep.
Who then promptly gets decapitated by a sheet of metal wielded by Frau Bruckner.
Very Dick Halloran.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we're back to where Inga comes in and saves the day.
Yeah.
But all of this happens in about 15 minutes. Like what we've been talking about in the last 15 or 20 minutes is just
pretty much real time minutes
of this movie.
Yeah. It's one of the craziest endings to a movie. Like,
it's like an onslaught. I had to just walk through it beat by beat here because I'm still processing it.
Yeah.
Like, it makes so little sense, and yet it all just keeps happening, one thing after another.
And it's the kind of movie where it's like, if you were to show someone
mm-hmm.
two scenes, the opening 5 minutes and the final 5 minutes,
yeah.
they would not believe you that this is the same movie.
Yeah. I think a lot of people wouldn't believe it's a real movie at all.
Yeah.
They'd be like, this is one of those joke trailers.
It feels like a fever dream or something.
Yeah, it does. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it absolutely does.
Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of it, right? Like, she walks off into the sunset with her monkey.
Yeah, with Inga. Just the two of them. They're going to go find Paul Corvino, wherever he shall be.
But, yeah, even, like, the thing with her Morris or whatever his name is, that's a weird subplot. Like another thread.
Yeah.
Like, how the hell does he find her at that garage, at the junkyard?
Right.
I don't know.
Mm.
But yeah, it definitely uses the giallo trappings of tying things up by having your villain maniacally scream it at someone.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we covered it.
Yeah.
It's not my fault if you didn't catch it, but we covered it.
This is also one of those movies where if you try to look too hard at any individual character or scene,
mm-hmm.
You can poke holes left, right, and center.
It's like
there's so many things that don't make linear time sense. But
like the thing that separates a movie like this from a traditional giallo is that I think the giallos I saw an interview with a writer who was a who wrote a bunch of giallos in the 70s.
Hmm.
And he was like, the number one rule of the giallo movie is that you have to write a mystery where if the person's paying enough attention, they can figure it out by the end, which is bullshit.
Yeah, that's bullshit. Absolutely. He's not, I feel like he's talking about an entirely different genre.
Yeah, I don't think, maybe he's not a good writer then.
I mean, maybe the kind of, I don't really know how big the giallo genre was in total. Like, we kind of are covering a lot of the greatest hits of it and the biggest names in it.
Yeah.
You know, we've done a lot of Argento and all of that. So I don't know. Maybe in Italy there were other giallo movies that were much more like, this is just a detective story.
It kind of, yes and no. Like, yeah. I think the heyday of it was basically like 1970 to 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, as these genres tend to do, you start getting elements that are bleeding into different kind of stuff. And like, you start getting one. I was watching a documentary on Tubi that was actually really fun. Can't remember what it's called. But it's about my other favorite Italian subgenre, the Polizio Tecchi movie.
Ah.
And at the beginning, they're talking about the life cycle of genre films in Italy, which is you have one or two of them that come out at the beginning that cause this massive splash.
Sure.
Then every single studio starts making only ripoffs of that or other ones that fall into that genre.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually they start to seep into other things. And then the genre is dead when they start making comedies. So when they started doing the spaghetti westerns, towards the end of that run, they were starting to do these comedy westerns. Like I think there's a series called My Name is Nobody or something like that. That's like all of the trappings of the spaghetti western.
Right, but we're laughing jokes. At it. Yeah.
And they do the same thing with giallo and horror and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with these ones, it kind of, around 75, it starts to peter out and starts to evolve. And it's pretty much done by the 80s. Like, there's some other ones that pop up in the early 80s, like Lamberto Bava does A Blade in the Dark, I think fairly late in the 80s. But they kind of get unseated by slasher movies.
Mm.
And which is a genre that was essentially directly formed by giallo films.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could argue this movie feels a little bit like a bridge between the two.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Well, that's what I find so interesting about Argento's stuff, because he, for the sake of argument, he basically starts the genre, the major popularity of the genre with Bird with the Crystal Plumage.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of sort of puts a cap on it with Deep Red about 5 years later. And then he starts doing stuff like this, where he does, well, first he does Tenebrae, which is a little bit more meta, dealing with this genre. Then he does something like this, which is like a giallo, but also crazy out there fantasy thing.
Yeah.
He seems to want to keep pushing the boundaries of what people expect him to do, but it's this weird thing where he also does a lot of the stuff they expect him to do, and it's a very interesting movie.
Yeah, he is a very interesting creative mind.
Yeah.
Where there's some stuff where I you watch what he's done and what he's come up with, and I just don't understand how a person gets there.
Yeah.
And then there's some stuff you watch and it becomes kind of predictable.
Sure.
It's just a really interesting juxtaposition to put them next to each other in the exact same movie.
He's also really, I find him very interesting because he is such a large presence in Italian genre film for he wrote on Once Upon a Time in the West, which was in like the late 60s. So he was working. That's a weird one. If you ever watch that movie and you look at like the screenplay credits, it's like Sergio Leone, Dario Argento, Bernardo Bertolucci, and like all these other guys who were just like these huge names that at the time weren't really, hadn't really hit on their own yet. Anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting.
he's such a big name in Italian genre movies for about 15 years. Like, this is probably the end of his golden period, I would say. Because after this is Opera, which is pretty good. And then I feel like, let me just pull it up real quick here, because I now I'm curious. What did I do? Did I get rid of it?
What did you do?
Let's see here. Dario Argento. He does a lot of producing. Like he's he produces a lot of other people's movies, and he works a lot with George Romero. Like he brought Dawn of the Dead to Italy.
Right.
Let's get rid of that. I don't want I'm not interested in writing. But yeah, so we got Phenomena, then Opera. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Two Evil Eyes I saw once and I didn't think was very good. And then he starts kind of getting worse and worse. And then by the 90s, he really falls. In the 90s and the 2000s, he really falls off.
Yeah.
Very unfortunately does the third of the Mother's trilogy in 2007, which everyone pretty much says kind of sucks.
No.
His most recent one from 2022 called Dark Glasses, I heard was kind of a return to form, but I don't know. He seemed to have his heyday. He did a lot of stuff. And then like a lot of these guys just sort of lost the juice.
Yeah.
But he's such a big name that he just has been around.
Yeah.
Where a lot of these other guys either stopped making movies or probably were a little older than he was.
Yeah. It is crazy to think that, you know, he was putting a movie out 4 years ago. He's got to be like 90 now.
No, he's not that old. He's really?
I think he might be that
1940
old.
1940 he was born,
so he's 86.
Okay, so that's almost 90. Yeah.
Yeah, like I don't know why you're quibbling with me over 90. That feels kind of accurate.
Hey, that,
actually
that old every day counts.
I know, but I'm just saying it's amazing that he's in his late 80s and is still, you know, he's still putting work out.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of those guys doing that. Scorsese's in his 80s.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott, I don't think, thinks he's ever going to die.
I mean, maybe he won't.
If any of these guys, him and James Cameron, I think.
Yeah.
Because Cameron has the money, but Ridley Scott, I think, just has the willpower.
Has a weird spiritual thing within him. Yeah.
But yeah, he's in between that 15 years, 1970 to 1985. He puts out 9 movies.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's more than one every other year.
Yeah, and a lot of them are pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah, do you have anything else you want to say about Phenomena?
I don't think so.
Oh, I did want to talk about my frustrations with the streaming.
Yes.
Because
were very mad.
Not to get too soapboxy about this, but when the streaming age started, the golden ideal of this was that you could access all of these movies in high quality, whatever, and be available, and they'd be available to watch, right? Even the original days of Netflix, when they were first sending out the discs and stuff, it just opened so many doors to the kind of things you could get. But the streaming, the promise was always much bigger than that, right?
Yeah. Like
you can watch literally everything ever made. Yeah. Like every business, the streaming platform has turned into, has gone from targeted things into just big nets full of mush.
Yes.
And much like using Amazon or anything like that, it's a real crapshoot whether or not you're going to get a good version of the thing you're looking for.
Yes.
And even if you go to Amazon and you try to buy a movie, like a DVD or something, or even a music or whatever, it always gives you like 5 different options, and you can't tell which one is like...
No, because the image doesn't have to be a literal image of the thing they're selling you. It just has to be a symbol.
Right.
Of the thing they're selling.
And even
you.
The listings in there are confusing, where it's like they've got 5 different formats of it, and then you click this one, but
and
that's not the one that you're looking
sellers
for.
Sellers nested under, like, you go and it looks like the official listing from whoever, but then depending on what's available, you have to be really careful about, like, sold by.
Yeah.
You know, Clay's DVDs. And you're like, who the fuck is that?
He's a guy who gives great deals. But what I'm getting at is, this is a movie. This is not the first time I've run into this problem. Maybe not this specifically, but this sort of quality thing where you're renting a movie from Amazon, which you're assuming is going to be like, oh, that's probably the top end, right?
Yeah, yeah. You'd assume it would be a fully watchable movie.
Yeah. And this movie it's not the best transfer.
No.
It looked fine to bad.
Yeah.
And it inexplicably for like a few seconds at a time would drop into Italian.
Yes.
And it was really strange.
Yeah, I can think of like three or four scenes where there are several lines exchanged.
Yeah.
Where it's just fully in non-English.
There was one towards the end when she's in the house with the teacher.
Yeah, they go back and forth for like a long time.
In my head, I was like, I bet these are the lines that explain everything that's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But thankfully, it's not a movie where it's not like a Michael Mann movie or something.
Right.
Or a David Mamet film or something.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And it's just like it's frustrating, and it's another argument towards the importance of having like a physical media availability. And this is a movie that has been put out by some great. I think Synapse put this out on 4K or something. It's out there. You can get like a high end version of it.
That's what I was going to say. Is there have been a couple movies while we have done this podcast that either the film itself is very old.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we did Phantom of the Opera, we were saying like the actual full original version of this probably doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. There are several different cuts. There's different tints. There's different
soundtracks.
Yeah. There's so many variations just because it's a 100-year-old movie and preservation used to be a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
For something that came out in the mid-80s. I feel like the like fully regionalized version of that shouldn't be that hard for Amazon to find. Like, also, I'm already paying for Prime, and now you're gonna have me pay for this movie,
right?
And it's going to be a bad version of the movie.
Yeah, and I understand licensing and stuff, and I'm sure that like those transfers that have been worked on by certain companies need to be licensed specifically, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, whatever.
But I just think it's shitty to pay to charge extra to watch a movie that's not.
Oh, definitely.
You know, if this had been one of the like free on Prime and it had that sort of weirdness, I would have been like,
if this had been Tubi, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And also, Tubi's excellent.
Yeah. Well, Amazon Prime is adding more and more ads to different things. I don't know if that's been happening to you, but
yeah, it is.
Yeah, especially when you watch TV. Like if you're watching like an episodic series, they're inserting ads more at the beginning, at least one break at some point during the actual episode. And I'm just getting more and more like, okay, why should I pay for all this then if I'm just going to be watching the ads anyway?
You know what drives me fucking nuts about that? Tubi's actually pretty good at this. YouTube, I feel like, is the worst offender. They have there's just some automated thing dropping the ads in.
Yeah.
So it drops it in at the worst possible times.
Yeah.
I've even seen videos where the people make the videos with breaks.
Yes.
Specifically to put ads there.
Yep.
And the ads don't go there.
Yep.
They go between sentences like 5 minutes later.
Yeah. Or a show that used to or currently is shown on broadcast television.
Mm-hmm.
And there are natural commercial breaks built into the flow of the episode, and yet we're going to ignore those.
I was the one that was killing me the other day, and this is all, you know, there's more important things going on in the world, but it's all
old man yells at cloud.
You know what though?
Literal cloud.
I think this stuff is all symptoms of the same problem.
Oh.
You know, the larger problem given the greediness of yada yada. Go to listen to my other podcast if you want to hear about that.
Sure.
It's called Claypital Riot. This is the worst pun I've ever made.
That's a really bad one.
what was I saying?
You were yelling at the cloud.
Yeah. So I'm watching like a monologue on from one of the late night shows, and they drop commercials in the middle of the monologue. And I'm like, if you were watching this on NBC, there's no commercial in the middle of that monologue.
No, no.
Drives me nuts.
Yep.
That's all to say.
We are done with Phenomena.
If it was Prime, I feel like you're expecting better.
Yes.
Tubi, that's fine. I honestly, as much as it sucks, because as all these things do, apparently Tubi is like partially or fully owned by Fox and blah, 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 blah. At least nothing, nobody can have anything nice.
Yep.
Tubi is actually a pretty awesome service that has an incredible selection of movies. That is the closest thing I've found in the streaming era to going into like an independent video store.
Yeah.
And looking through their stacks.
Yeah.
Because where Prime and those things are obviously pushing all this new stuff.
Yep.
You go on to Tubi and it's like, here's some movies we think you'll like.
Yeah.
Gator starring Burt Reynolds. Right. White Lightning starring Burt Reynolds. Hard Target in the West starring Oliver Reed. And it's like, okay.
Say Burt Reynolds again.
Let's do it.
I know all about your algorithm now.
Let's do it. It has ads, which is a pain, but like.
But again, I feel like increasingly that's the direction all of them are going to be going in.
Yeah. I started one recently that I had to tap out on, though, because do you know the movie Heaven's Gate? It's a...
Is it about the cult?
No, it's well
then
before
I
that.
Don't.
It's a notorious flop. It was sort of the movie that signaled the end of the auteur filmmaker era. It's made by Michael Cimino, the guy who did Deer Hunter.
Oh, okay.
It's like 3 hours long,
mm-hmm.
and it... just completely bombed, and it was like the marker for this, like, oh, it's another Heaven's Gate. And it's been long enough that people are like, you know, actually Heaven's Gate's pretty good. And I was just curious, because that guy's a good filmmaker.
Sure. Yeah.
So I sat down. It was on Tubi. Was the only place it was. And I sat down to watch it
every
and so,
18 minutes you're gonna get 3 minutes of ads.
Yeah. I play it and it's like, okay, 3 minutes of ads, not bad. And then at the first break, which I want to say was like 10 minutes later, it was like one of eight, and I was like, I can't do this.
Oh yeah, no,
this movie is so long, I can't do it.
No, that's gonna like double and
I wasn't like doing something else. It was like I sat down. My wife had gone to bed.
Yep.
That's where I say wife now because I got married.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to watch Heaven's Gate. And after 10 minutes, I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
That's not the way you. Yeah. It's different than being like, I would like to watch an episode of Parks and Rec.
Right.
Like, if I'm watching, that has a couple ad breaks in it. I'm just going to go get another seltzer or whatever and chill the fuck out.
But if I'm watching Heaven's Gate while I'm working, that's fine. Anyway, long way for me to say bye, physical media.
I thought you were just going to say bye. Like, bye. Goodbye.
Physical media is great. It always looks better with streaming. It's fun to collect stuff. I don't know. Don't listen to
this
me.
This has been Old Man Yells at the Cloud Corner.
Yeah. Hey, people are wising up. It's coming back. Because all the streaming channels are... deleting stuff and I'm just saying.
No, it's absolutely
get those
true.
Cheap Blu-rays while you can.
Yeah, there have definitely been. I'm giving you funny faces, but I absolutely agree. And there have been several things that I have bought on physical media because they disappear them off of streaming, and there's no guarantee they'll ever come back.
Yep.
And I'm not even talking about like super niche stuff. It's just you never know.
Yeah.
They don't, you pay for the stuff on Amazon or you pay for your Netflix subscription and there's no guarantee that that thing you love is ever going to be there again.
Yeah. Like the fact that as far as I know, you can't buy Andor officially licensed on DVD or 4K or something is insane.
Yep.
Because if there's one thing that I know there's about the truisms of the world is never play poker with a guy with the same last name as the city. Sorry, this is all from Teen Wolf. I'm sorry. Never play poker with a guy who has the first name of a city.
Okay.
never get involved with a woman who has a dagger tattooed on her thigh.
That's fair.
And Star Wars stuff always makes money.
Yep.
So they're just leaving money on the table, as far as I'm concerned. And the rest is cream cheese. Okay. that's going to be it for. Oh, the music in this is by some iteration of Goblin. Claudio Simonetti, and it's got needle drops and stuff.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a nice operatic soprano singing.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah. So that's gonna do it for Phenomena. This is number 198 on our list.
I have to do this one time before we sign off. Phenomena. Do 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 do. Phenomenon.
My mother did that relentlessly when that John Travolta movie Phenomenon came out. And I hadn't seen that Muppets thing. And I was like, what are you doing? You're driving me insane. I don't understand. And she was just like, Phenomenon. Doo, yeah. doo, doo, doo. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ.
You tell your wife I did that for her.
I will.
Thank you.
Number 198 on our list. How do you feel about that? Up, down, off?
I'll be honest. I'm kind of surprised this one makes the list.
I am too. Especially seeing the stuff that has had been added to the list and has then been dropped off the list.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit surprised this one's on there because it's not... It's not... I don't think it's one of the three or four Argentos I would put on this list.
Right. And I know whenever we talk about this, my criteria tend to fall into two camps. The first is usually, these are supposed to be horror movies. Is this movie actually scary or mm-hmm. horrifying in some way? And then if not, has it had some sort of long-lasting cultural impact on like a bigger scale?
Apparently not enough to get a good transfer on Prime.
Right, but like, and I do feel like this movie is kind of niche, you know?
Oh, definitely,
yeah. It's pretty niche. It's fun and enjoyable in a lot of ways, and it has several things to recommend it, but I don't think it's a particularly scary movie.
No.
And I also don't think it had a big influence.
Yeah.
Like, it's not one of those movies where you see the generation of directors that came after that took mm-hmm. inspiration from it, or like The Blob, which has just become shorthand.
Right.
About, you know, you can say The Blob and people know what you're talking about.
You haven't noticed that the kids are saying, man, that guy was such a jerk, I'm going to go Inga on his ass.
Phenomena.
Well, it's funny because in America, this movie was released by New Line Cinemas as Creepers and was cut from 116 minutes down to 85.
Oh, jeez.
So I think they also saw this film and were like, I don't really know how to classify this or how to sell this. So let's just strip it to the bone.
Mumble,
and
mumble, mumble, Jennifer Connelly, mumble, mumble.
Yeah, this knives, blood, blah, Chimp. Blah, wine, blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did that a couple times. I have one of those, for the golden era of DVD, where they could put literally anything on DVD and people would buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I have one of those two disc sets you'd get at like Best Buy that has like 15 horror movies on it, and they're all some variation of
the
public domain.
The fucking best.
I have one that I had pulled out, and I was watching one movie on it. This was like maybe 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized they were using the music from Deep Red on the DVD screen, like the load screen. And I was like, what the hell? Why are they just stealing the Deep Red music? And so I played this movie. Uh-huh. It was called The Hatchet Murders.
Uh-huh.
And what do I learn when I hit play? Is it was Deep Red.
Yeah.
But it was retitled as The Hatchet Murders. I don't know if that's what it was released as in America or maybe like Lithuania or something. I don't know, but
amazing.
Anyway,
yeah,
it's I kind of wish people still did that. Speaking of physical media, we don't talk about physical media for another 4 hours.
Maybe not 4 hours, but I can probably give you 4 minutes.
I just got the new Arrow Video set of the original three Ninja Turtles movies.
Oh boy.
And one of the man, you want to see a decline in quality across three movies.
Aww.
Boy. One of the fun things on the special features is I learned that apparently in Korea,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's still this way, but it was at the time,
mm-hmm.
you had to remove any mention of Japan or Japanese stuff from a movie.
Oh, that's not true anymore.
So at the time, that movie was released in Korea as Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles. And the word ninja is nowhere to be found in that movie.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah. They have a bit of a history.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. It's been a little tense at times. What about you? Do you think this should be on the list?
It's... No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't... Again, like if you want to look at movies you're going to take from Argento to put on this list, Suspiria, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Deep Red, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say probably Bird with the Crystal Plumage pulling up the rear.
Yeah.
And then... maybe Tenebrae, but
yeah.
I feel like after
I would do Tenebrae before this.
Yeah. Yeah, after those three, I feel like it's kind of a crapshoot, and yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to do it for Phenomena. We hit our randomizer button. Beep, boop, boop, beep, beep, boop, boop, beep, boop. And next time we will do it. We will be doing number 151, Paranormal Activity.
Hey!
Which I'm very excited about. I haven't watched that movie probably since it came out.
That movie used to help me fall asleep.
You are a psychopath because that movie scared the shit out of me.
You and I are built different.
I've told you the story. I probably said this during the Scream episode that I used to go to bed when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I would put on a videotape,
mm-hmm.
and then I would turn the brightness down on my TV so it was just the audio. And then I would, you know, sleep timer it, and so I could, you know, shut off and go to bed. And
this
I did
would be
that.
A horrible movie to do that.
Yeah,
too.
I did that to Scream.
Oh.
And I'm laying there in that first scene, and it's like, do you want to play a game? What's your favorite scary movie? I'm like, this is not.
I think I made a mistake.
This is not as relaxing as I thought it was going to be.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
You could do that with Paranormal Activity because there's like 8 lines of dialogue in the whole movie.
But what would happen is you'd fall like almost totally asleep.
Yeah.
And then you would hear something horrific.
Yeah, and then all the pots and pans would fall out of the cabinets.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. If you want to help support the show, again, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Follow us as we get into sequels. And it's going to be sequels. I originally was thinking it doesn't have to be a sequel to a movie we've already covered.
Mm.
But with some exception, I think we should do our best to cover the original on the main feed before like we did with the reboots.
Yeah.
Again, with some exception, like Prom Night 2, we don't need to cover Prom Night.
Right. But there are some where it would really behoove you to have seen the original if you're going to go into a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to be hooved, go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you, Clay.
See you next time.
Happy New Year, everyone.